Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance. The CFO role is changing rapidly, moving from cost controller to strategic visionary. And with every change comes opportunity. We are here to help you take advantage of this transition, to win at work, drive your career forwards, and lead with confidence. Join Hannah Munro, Managing Director of ITAS, a financial transformation consultancy, as she interviews key experts to give you real-world advice and guidance on how to transform your processes, people, and data. Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of CFO 4.0. With me today is Alicia Randall. And now don't let her accent confuse anybody. She is obviously based here in the UK, but Alicia is a portfolio CFO and coach to aspiring FDs. So wonderful to have you on the show, Alicia.
Thank you so much.
I can see you hear that accent coming through. So tell us, right, how did you end up on our side of the pond? What's been your journey to CFO?
Okay, so I came here back in 2006, so a long time ago. And like most Australians, came here to travel for 2 years and then go back home.
That seems to be the trend.
I know. So as I watched all my Australian friends leave, I kind of got stuck here. So, and that's fine. So I think I'm here permanently, shall we say.
Lovely.
So I arrived here as a qualified accountant, and ever since then I've been working in startup fast growth area, which I love. And I started off with a company called Love Film. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah, I do.
So, yeah, it sounds crazy now, especially to Gen Z that we used to send DVDs through the post. But
I was actually a customer, I think, back then. I'm really showing my age right now. Nobody listened to this podcast.
So that was quite an experience. I had an amazing mentor, the CFO there, Jim Buckle, and he now works for Gusto. So he was amazing and kind of really coached me up from a financial controller to a director of finance. So I was very lucky there. And then they were acquired by Amazon. So I worked for Amazon for a couple of years, which was a real eye-opener. And then I moved from them to Funding Circle. So I was the first finance director for Funding Circle. So early stage, really fast growth, crazy growth, and then helped them IPO. So I've been really, really fortunate because I've had two successful exits. So one acquisition and one listed company. So very, very lucky. And then from 2019, then I wanted to kind of stay in that real fast paced, smaller company. And to do that, portfolio CFO work is the best because they don't need someone full time. They just want someone to pop in every so often and help them. So.
Come in, rescue them, and then carry on with their day job.
Basically, yes. So that's why since 2019 I've been doing that. So that's kind of my journey.
Amazing. And actually, weird enough, you said some really interesting things. And I know we talked roughly before we started about some general questions. So I apologize in advance for going off script. All of my listeners will know that I am terrible at just asking what I'm hearing. But you said a really interesting phrase was it Jim Buckle from Gusto? He said he really was a great coach and mentor. So what did he do to help you step up? And what words of wisdom did he share with you?
I think the biggest things for me was boosting my confidence. I think being like 15 years ago, being a woman, and walking into a room full of men, like that was very daunting. And also being a foreigner as well, I probably needed a bit of that confidence boost. So he was brilliant at feedback. But both good and constructive. So he would always say, you're really good at this. This is where you shine. This is where you can help other people. This is where we can use you in different departments, which he did because I ended up managing the business intelligence team as well by the end of my tenure. or he would give you constructive criticism and say, this is the areas we can help. And if he couldn't help, he would find a coach to help me with those shortcomings. So he was very much with you in your career journey rather than just telling you what tasks need completing.
That's amazing. And I think that's a shout out to anyone that's got a team and is, you know, is looking to mentor them. I love a couple of things about what you said there. So I think firstly, we kind of assume that all people want to hear is good feedback, and it's definitely not. For anyone that's got any kind of smarts, constructive feedback genuinely does help you develop, and you want to hear it. And secondly, that even if you couldn't help, he helped you find someone that could. So two great steps for mentoring. Yeah. And obviously you're on your mentoring journey as well, helping others.
Yes.
So he's really passed the baton down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely learned a lot, that's for sure.
So in terms of obviously when you're, you know, you talked about loving being in fast growth. Tell us what some of the differences, having worked in different kinds of organizations, what you saw and felt in your first fast growth startup world.
Yeah. I really enjoy the pace of it and the chaos. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, chaos.
It's pretty chaotic. So the thing that I love, I'm at one of those people that likes to make decisions quite quickly. And I think from that perspective, that really matches what a fast growth business or a startup business kind of needs. It is a little bit of move fast, break stuff, start again, move
fix
fast.
Fix it behind you.
Putting out fires, problem solving, and very, very fast paced. So for me, that's what I really enjoy, that fast pace. Working for an incredibly large organization, you know, like Amazon, not necessarily pointing fingers, but like most large companies, a decision has to go through so much bureaucracy in order for the decision to be made. Whereas with, with fast growth startups, if you make a decision, great, implement, off you go, you know, that you don't have to wait for four signatures in order to implement a change. So I think that's one of the big, you know, attracting things for me. And off the back of that, you also see how you can add that value. So you really are making a difference in the company. You're not just a number. You really are. I'm the person that's managing finance. This is what I'm doing, you know, not necessarily from an ego point of view, but you don't feel like just one of 20,000 people. You are actually, you can see the contribution and changes that you're making to the business. So, yeah, they're the biggest things that I really enjoy about the industry.
And obviously there's a con to every pro. So what are some of the challenges on the opposite side of those startup worlds?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious one is instability. So, you know, small businesses, they are going to go a bit belly up more often than, say, a corporate. So that does play a little bit in your background, particularly at very, 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 very early stage. But assuming, that's okay, it is kind of that putting out the fires constantly and being comfortable with the chaos. So there is good and bad with that. And being an accountant where your job is to cross the T's and dot the I's and make sure that there's a process and everybody signs and authorizes it, you are sometimes, you do have a bit of an uphill battle there. So, and I think for a leader, the hardest part is finding time to think. So you could very easily just be putting out fires every single day and dealing with the short-term problems. But as a leader, you need to think more long-term. You know, is this process that we've got in place going to survive if the business doubles year on year, which isn't uncommon? Or do we need to think of a better way of doing things? And I think setting aside that time to think and look long term, it's really hard to do that when you've just got constant fires and things happening. So I think that's a real challenge for a finance leader. Yeah,
Yeah, because yeah. And let's be honest, is I think I literally was having this chat with someone else, I think this morning, is that there is a big difference between working in corporate and startup. And like you say, that comfort with chaos and, you know, and also whether you thrive in it, because it's not about can you do it. It's about whether you enjoy the pressure and the think on your feet style approach, or whether you are naturally a more you want time to process and think things through. And that's, they're two different individuals, I find.
Yeah, and I've seen both, especially someone coming into the industry for the first time. You know, I've had ex-auditors go, you know, their next job is fast growth. And either they're like, oh, wow, this is so exciting. This is so interesting. Audit was so boring. I love this. Or they're like, holy moly, I cannot not have everything perfect.
I'm pretty sure the word moly doesn't come out. I'm pretty sure there's a few more expletives.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I've certainly seen both, and I think you're absolutely correct. If there's not a you're good or you're bad, it's this suits your style or it doesn't. So, yeah.
So I guess, so we talked a little bit what it looks like, but where, you know, how do you... Do you think a successful startup CFO, if I can use that term, would approach the first 90 days? Because I've done a lot of podcasts talking about general CFOs, but I almost see startups and fast growth in a category of its own. So what do you think the first 90 days would look like?
I think before you start, it's a good idea to understand the industry. So, you know, when you work fast growth, and startup businesses, you're not necessarily always doing SaaS, always doing food, always doing e-commerce, always doing fintech. You actually could do all of them. I mean, my clients are all of those industries. So you're right, it's an industry on itself. So it's understanding the industry within. So understanding their product, who their competitors are, you know, doing that kind of research before starting, I think that gives you a good stead. Then going in, I think, I'd say there's two things. There's the things that you have to do as an accountant, and that will be, unfortunately, and this is the first thing I do with every client, is do a due diligence. I can tell you right now that balance sheet is going to have lots of skeletons, like 100%. I've never started a company and they don't have skeletons on the balance sheet. And I think while they're still small and nimble, it's a good idea to just sort it out and then... So then, you know, it's not going to become a bigger problem. So just making sure the due diligence and the compliance is up to scratch and kind of doing that in the background. And then I'd say the next part would be, month, I'd say, would be developing those relationships. So, you know, doing that business partnering work. So the leadership team, who are they? What can you do to add value and help them achieve their goals? You know, who's on the board? Who are the investors? Who are the bankers, your auditors, if you have one, you know, tax accountants, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of coffee conversations, I think, to just really understand them, how you can support them, what their kind of issues are that they need assistance with, what their goals are for the next 3, 6, 12 months, so you know where they're heading and how you can support them. But also when you get to the point of analyzing the data and the variances and what have you, you could highlight things or issues that they might need to look at or focus on in order for them to hit their goals. So I would say there'd be two things. Make sure the baseline's accurate, because you can't do anything until the baseline's accurate. And then developing those relationships, because the relationships can take a long time. And I think if you start straight away, because it's very easy to say, hey, I'm new, want to have a chat? You know, it's a very easy conversation, rather than saying in 3 months' time, oh, we've never caught up. Like, I'd really like to know you. Like, it's a much harder conversation. So I think they're the start. And then obviously after you've got your baseline, you've got your relationships, I think then you can start looking at being more strategic. And then obviously with the founder, that's one of your most important relationships, and trying to get, be that voice of reason, maybe.
So diplomatic skills an absolute must for any CFO.
Yeah, absolutely. And also because you know, as you kind of mentioned in the intro, fundraising is a very, very, very big part. So hopefully you have 6 to 12 months before the fundraise is going to be start. Usually you don't get that luxury and you maybe have to hit the ground running a bit faster than what you want. But if you have that luxury, then yeah, get the framework, get the framework and the baseline run and get into those relationships. Yeah.
So talking of managing cash and funding, because obviously it's a huge topic at the moment, and we can talk about some of recent events and how they've impacted that. Yes. But fundamentally, the funding environment at the moment is, again, certainly from what the conversation I've had with our customers and other CFOs and industry, it's a challenging one at the moment. So what are you seeing, particularly around startups and fast growth?
Yeah, I'm seeing the big industries or the fashionable industries like AI, VR, they are having no problems fundraising at the moment. So for them, it's kind of business as usual. But with the other businesses, you know, most of the other businesses, we are finding that at the moment, a lot of people are extending their runway for as long as possible, really kind of streamlining the processes and reviewing the costs. To try and get as close to break even, if not break even, as much as possible, and delaying the fundraise, or in a few cases, just doing a top up round. So a small round just to extend that runway a bit and then try and do a fundraise, you know, in 2 years' time, hopefully. It is a bit tough out there at the moment. So there is fundraising, but they're generally not at the same terms as they were as little as 12 months ago when it was much easier to do a fundraise. So, so extending the runway as much as possible, that's kind of a big focus at the moment. Yeah.
And are you seeing an increase in due diligence at the moment around fundraise?
No, actually. I haven't yet. That's a good question. And I think it's probably something maybe we will expect over the coming months. Generally, I try to be prepared for a due diligence at any time. So ideally, every month end should be a proper month end. So, and your balance sheet should be clean. So if all of a sudden...
that balance sheet's got to be tidy.
The balance sheet. I know. It's like, you know, the P&L is where the ego is, but the balance sheet is what signs the checks. There's a term like that out there, isn't there? Not more than what I've seen. Generally, I find there's a little bit of due diligence in a seed or series A, but then a series B is when there's a proper one. And I'm seeing the same at the moment.
Now, for the £1 million question. What is the best finance software for your business? Is it A, Sage 50? Is it B, Sage 200 Standard? C, Sage 200 Professional? Or D, Sage Intacct? An impossible question to answer without a lifeline. But we have the perfect lifeline for you. Our free quiz, which Sage product is right for you, will tell you which product is the best fit for your business in just 5 minutes. All you need to do is head to www.itassolutions.co.uk and answer a few simple questions.
Yeah, because I saw, particularly I think SaaS has been hit, particularly in Series A funding. I saw a stat actually from Crunchbase that Series A funding has become a bit, you know, there's a lot less of that around potentially versus obviously if you're profitable and the business model's established and working well, but I think that there's always money for good investments. But I think it's, like you say, so much more challenging taking that step up at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I'm seeing so many top up rounds. They just can't do a proper Series A.
So in terms of obviously managing cash. Now, you mentioned obviously both the relationship, but I hesitate to use keeping control of the founder is really important to a healthy, you know, CFO and startup relationship. But how do you approach that? What, you know, have you got any tips for anyone that perhaps is having some challenges in that area at the moment?
Yeah, it is challenging because founders can really be the lead singer of a rock band. So So depending on that, generally I try and bring it back to the vision and the longer term goals, because it's very easy. What I find the hardest thing is shiny object syndrome. I generally, because, you know, founders, they're very good at, there's a new product, here's something amazing, let's do this. Let's forget the core product and let's just focus on this new shiny object. And I think it's trying to just bring them back down and say, this is the mission and the focus for this year and the goals. Is this going to divert your attention from the mission and the goals? And it's trying to bring it back down to that. Ultimately, what are we here for? So it's like they all have a mission. This is, you know, we want to be the best at XYZ for this customer. And then it's like, okay, in the end of this year, this is a place we want to be. Or before we fundraise, we want to show this, this, and this. Is it going to do that? So it's trying to get that focus rather than shiny object. So
shiny toy syndrome. I'm pretty sure there's a few CFOs going, oh, yeah, and that's not just at startup level.
No, that's probably true as well. So, yeah, yeah.
And I guess, you know, part of that piece, as you say, is managing founders, managed relationships. How do you figure out whether a company is the right fit for you? So when you're going in and you're speaking to a company and thinking about taking them on as a client, how do you, do you have a few criteria that you tick the box on? Or do you have a process by which you figure out whether you're the right fit for a founder or for a business?
It's probably different depending on whether you're going for a full-time role, obviously, or a portfolio. For me, with doing portfolio work, I know how I can help a founder. I have a framework and I know what I do and what I can do quickly for them in order to help them. So generally, if one of my first questions is, what are your problems? What issues are you having? And they will tell me what problems they're having. And if that's kind of aligned and that works, especially if I tell them how I could solve that problem and they kind of agree with my process. So for me, it's quite different than if I was looking for a more longer-term role. I think for a longer-term role, for me personally, I would have to be passionate for the product and the business. Twofold. Firstly, generally you'll be become a shareholder. So usually, part of your remuneration will be EMI or equity. So you will become a shareholder of the company and you will probably have to do long hours. So if you want to become a shareholder and have that passion, because your founder is incredibly passionate about it as well. And so if you're not passionate about the product, and you're dealing with someone that's very passionate about the product, it's very hard to see eye to eye. And so I think you have to really love what they're doing and it's kind of aligned with your values and your ethics, which is quite interesting now too, because there's lots of startups coming up with solar paneling and sustainability and, you know, lots of these kind of topics, trying to solve these kind of issues. And so I think it's a bit easier now than what it was. I think you really need to be passionate. And of course you have to get along with the founder. Like if you turn up for an interview and you butt head straight away, it's probably not going to work. So
yeah, it's not the great start to a relationship, is it?
No, exactly. So, but yeah, like really feeling that excitement for the company, like it's your own almost, then I don't think that's a bad thing. Yeah.
And are there any, on the other side, that's the things that you look for. What about any red flags? What, you know, for those that, you know, whether you're a portfolio CFO or obviously looking for a full-time role, what are the things that make you go, that isn't for me, you know, either personally or it would be things that you would advise someone to think about?
Yeah, I think it was a personality clash.
Yeah.
So it was someone that was incredibly dominant and seem to micromanage. That was never going to work for me. I think it is actually just the reverse of what I said. I just didn't believe in the product, in their revenue model. I just didn't believe that the company was going to survive. I think I was wrong. I think the company has had a successful Series C last year, and I said no about 5 years ago, so not always right. But, I just didn't believe in the product at all. So, yeah, I just didn't understand how they could make money. But that's, you know. they're the times I've said no, but, yeah.
I think there's an interesting dynamic happening, I think, in finance, is that we're moving away from obviously just crunching numbers to, and I had this conversation literally with the guys from one of the guys from SEMA talking about purpose-driven finance. And I think that whole, you know, investment and people wanting to be invested in the company, the product, and stand for something more than just obviously being in a role, I think that's definitely something that I don't, you know, I see more of in, you know, in today's conversations, which I actually think is a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. I've seen that actually in staff surveys as well, particularly as the younger generations come in, they're more interested in not necessarily higher salaries, but learning and development, understanding the point of their role, understanding how their role fits into the bigger picture. I found they're more either suggestions or complaints even or what they want from the role. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. It's definitely changing and I agree with you also for the better, yeah.
So talking of obviously developing staff, so if with your two hats on, one is sort of coach to aspiring CFOs and FDs, but also, and your role as portfolio CFO, I'm guessing you might come in and they've got some really junior members of team in finance. How do you approach that mentoring, coaching, learning and development piece?
I think the biggest thing is trying to move away, and it's following on quite nicely from Chocolate we just touched on, moving away from that operational part of accounting and trying to think more on that leadership side. So with real juniors, it's thinking about how to automate their role. So if they're using Excel heavily, how can they get off Excel, basically? How can they stop using Excel with the array of tools that are out there so that they can spend their time looking at issues, doing analysis, problem solving, rather than just data entry, essentially? So it's getting them to kind of move a bit. And then also with leaders as well, it's also getting them to think about not think about operations and think about value add. And I mean, the management accounts is actually a perfect example for both sides, because it's, well, for starters, Deloitte said not that long ago in a report when they were talking about AI, is in about 5 years' time, we're just going to be able to click a button and the management accounts are there. And so if that was existing today, what would you do with it? What would you do if you had that ability now? So it's, what kind of trends are you going to be looking at? How can you change the structure of it so that the finances tell the same story as the founder is telling to potential investors? How can you spotlight a particular area so that it helps someone achieve their OKRs for the quarter? How can you add in charts and commentary that is actually useful and doesn't just state facts? So it's trying to get people to think outside the back corner of the room surrounded by files, and really, a CFO said to me once, getting that seat at the table. So if you have a seat at the table for decision-making, looking at the commercials, then basically you've done your job properly. So if the marketing team can't make a decision about a large campaign without you, then you are doing the right thing. So you should have a seat at the table to be able to be part of that conversation rather than just being reactive every month and saying, this is what has happened. I think, it's quite different now. And I think AI is going to push that even faster than perhaps some people are ready for.
It's really interesting, obviously, doing what I do involved in a lot of technology. And that whole push button, it's not far. Like, it's we're starting to see it. You know, continuous close, all of that is really exciting. But anyway, we won't get distracted with technology. I did promise we wouldn't talk technology today, but maybe another time. So we've talked about, you know, some really great stuff here. So bringing up junior members of the team, you know, building relationships, managing your founder, managing cash and funding and keeping an eye on that balance sheet. But with lots of things that have happened at the moment, risk management has really come up in the conversations and I think become more apparent, not just to the exec, but and to, you know, or just to boards, but to the exec and to the lower down in the conversation. So how do you manage risk when you're going into a startup? And is it a conversation that you're having with the founder?
Yeah, I mean, we do. Generally, with startups and founders, the biggest risk, one of the biggest risks is cash, just running out of it, basically. So we do, and that's why runway is actually one of the main metrics. So having that as a forefront, you know, you generally have your North Star and a couple of main ones, but runway does need to be looked at regularly. And it's how to conserve and manage that. So with, say, for example, with the latest, you know, banking situations, everybody's now having two bank accounts for every single company rather than just one. So you've got that kind of get out clause. And then it's thinking about how people can, unfortunately, I will say one thing I see regularly is external fraud, particularly supplier fraud. I've seen that a lot. And so it's working out how to put in the right processes to manage that, particularly around change of bank details, suppliers requesting change of bank details. That's the one I've seen a lot. So if you don't have any processes for when someone requests a change of bank details, I recommend changing that quickly. So it's looking at those kind of controls of managing cash. With other risk management, I mean, you know, risk registers and what have you, I've worked on quite detailed risk registers with larger businesses. With the smaller one, it's more just understanding what those risks are and what we can do to mitigate against those. Your insurance broker will always highlight the risks that you have.
Yeah, if you want to know risk, just speak to an insurance broker.
Exactly. they're always like a good start. And like whether you insure against that is up to you. But I think from a finance person, it's just making sure there's no leaky cash and you kind of plug all of those gaps. Yeah.
Awesome. We've talked about a lot about differences between startup and the corporate world, and I've been very general with that. But what about portfolio? Being the difference between being a portfolio CFO versus a full time. You know, what's your view on that?
So I like it because I really get to know an array of different businesses, and so it certainly keeps me on my toes. and also if something really works for one client, I can implement very quickly with another. And so, you know, I know for sure I'm a much better portfolio CFO now than what I was when I first started, just from those learnings. So that's quite good. I think the challenge with it is the lack of time. So, you know, if you're working in a business full-time, you really get to know the business really well, the people you're working with really well, and the time to find issues, you have more time, you know. So that's certainly challenging. So it's trying to utilize the people that are working for the business and getting to know them. Obviously, the founder and the head of finance, or the most senior finance person in the business, they're the people I lean on the most. But yeah, you probably are working faster than what you want if you're in house. So maybe I'm a sucker for punishment. But
yeah, but the payoff is you work harder, but you've got more variety and hopefully And, you know, so to be honest, Alicia, it's been so lovely to pick your brains, and there's been some great, great answers and food for thought, I think, for anyone that's been listening to this podcast. And whether they're in a portfolio CFO role, or they're thinking about it, or, you know, or they're, you know, it's something that they're interested in getting into. I guess my question for you is, like, what do you see as the signs of a successful portfolio CFO? So if you're in a portfolio CFO role, how do you know you're doing a good job? Because, you know, pat on the back is maybe not always available, depending on how good your founder is. What, you know, how do you self-assess, and how do you make sure that you feel like you're doing a good job?
Yeah, that's a good question, because sometimes it's hard to do that. So so if there is any good feedback, I kind of file it away if I ever need it.
Print it out and put it on my clipboard.
Yeah. So if I'm ever like beating myself up, I just go to this folder. I would say recommendation. So I'm quite lucky that I haven't had to really advertise the done for you, the portfolio work at all, because I get so many recommendations. So I'm always very grateful whenever I get a recommendation, but it's also that's 100% the confirmation that you're doing a good job. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the best thing. Yes. To be fair, as a business, I see our success is when people talk about it and are willing to put their voice on and saying, these are the people you need to speak to. And it's the best recommendation, I think, that you can ever get.
Yeah,
absolutely. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Alicia. I genuinely really appreciate your time today, and it's been so lovely to, and thank you for sharing your experiences. So, you know, perhaps if anyone wants to learn more about you, perhaps there's somebody that, you know, is looking for a portfolio CFO and wants to reach out, what's the best place to find you?
Well, either LinkedIn or my website, which is fastgrowthconsulting.com.
Fabulous. And for anyone that for whatever reason cannot remember that URL, don't you worry, we'll pop both Alicia's LinkedIn profile link and that website into the show notes. So
amazing.
Thank you once again, Alicia. It's been lovely chatting to you, and thank you for joining the show.
Thanks so much, Hannah. It's been a pleasure.
One of the hardest things, I think, is actually putting into words what it means to work with myself and the team here at ITAS. Because not only are we a financial transformation consultancy, but we do it using Sage technology. So rather than me tell you how awesome we are, let me introduce one of our customers.
I'd recommend ITAS as a Sage partner, not only because of their knowledge that they have on the product itself intact, but also their friendly and professional approach to the whole project. They've been incredibly flexible throughout the process, but also challenging us as a customer to really think about what it is that we're after, and ensuring that Intact was actually the correct solution for us to meet our needs, which was really refreshing, rather than feeling we're just being sold a product that they offer. We've got on really well with the whole team. They've been hugely approachable, helpful throughout the whole process, really putting it as at ease if it, you know, anything we kind of felt we were struggling with or difficult. It really helped us to understand some of the complexities with the new system that's different to other finance systems, things that we've just never come across before, like the new dimensions and understanding how that actually works.